Hey, this is episode 401 of the 343 podcast. Today is another doozy with respect to the structure of American youth soccer. What has it looked like over the decades? How has it evolved or devolved over that course of time? Because a lot of folks out there think that it's been up and to the right the whole time and things have gotten better and better and better. But let me tell you something, that's not really the case or not always the case. So we dive deep into that. And of course, we're going to go into little side quests about the U.S. men's national team, Major League Soccer, the professional game, and the U.S. youth national teams. Because apparently, everybody got really excited when we beat France, when we beat Italy, and then we were going to go into playing Morocco, and they were saying the same stuff they've said for decades. The future is bright. Look at this next generation. It might be a golden generation. How many times have you heard that before? And context matters, folks, especially for all you youth folks out there, youth coaches, youth parents, and even the media. The media needs to get a little bit wiser here in the States. So I hope you enjoy this episode. But first, if you're a coach or a parent of a player, please take a few moments to listen to what sponsors this episode. For coaches, per usual, get your butts over to 343coaching.com and sign up right away. That way you can start with the training activities that have been proven to work, not just for the players, not just for the team, but for your own coaching trajectories. We've had countless testimonials over the years of people writing into me saying, Gary, oh my God, I've been a 343 member for 1, 2, 3, 5 years, however long it happens to be for a particular coach. And they tell me their success stories, whether it's winning championships, whether it's taking the bottom of the table team to the middle of the pack team or middle of the pack team to contending with a title. And of course, career trajectory. So head on over to 343coaching.com and learn from the people who have pioneered a seismic shift here in American soccer over the past couple of decades. I should mention for the parents out there, if you've been considering joining the 343 Masterclass, you know, for parent education so that you can better guide and mentor your kids, we're offering some free merch if you join within the next couple of weeks. So while supplies last, if you sign up at 343masterclass.com, yes, we will ship you some merch. We're putting in our orders now, so we have to get all the sizes correct. We got to get all the numbers correct so that we can deliver to you by December. A nice little Christmas present for you. And I should say, if you've been with us for a while, you know that we harp on quality. Quality, quality, quality. So this isn't just some t-shirt or something, some merchandise that you can get online, you know, through all these regular sites. No, we've done our homework over years of trying and testing different vendors, of trying and testing different fabrics. So you know what you're going to get is top of the line. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go.
Let's get right into it today, Gary. No small talk today.
Fire away.
I want to chat today about the good, the bad, the ugly of club soccer in the United States. My goal, Gary, for today's episode, more so for the parents, and I think it'll be beneficial for coaches as well, but I really want the parents to walk away from listening to this episode and hopefully it opens their eyes a little bit, you know, because as a practitioner in the club scene for the past 10 years, I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, I've seen thousands and thousands of parent money being quote unquote wasted. And I just kind of want to paint the picture of what the landscape is like today. But before we get into that, I want to ask you, I think we briefly talked about it before, but when you were growing up, what was the club scene like? Was there a club scene at all, or was it more just kind of Sunday league type infrastructure, you know, not as serious as it is today, or not as regulated as it is today?
Yeah, it's hard to know really, because when you're a kid, you're totally not aware of the world around you.
Right.
First and foremost. And so what existed back then, and what's really cool is nice stories from like Eric Winalda's days. Eric Winalda is obviously a bit older than I am, but still you can kind of say in that sort of region, or even like Landon Donovan, where, you know, they got their starts in AYSO. So way back in the day, it was literally just AYSO for the most part. And then the club scene started to kind of come into play a little bit. I would say maybe in the, let's see, I'm trying to calculate based on my age, because when I started playing club, I was in the late teens already. So maybe like late 80s, something like that. There was kind of some sort of established, you know, pay to play, quote unquote, competitive circuit. that was, you could say, is recognizable even. And I don't know if it was the Coast Soccer League, honestly, but I seem to remember like there was a gold bracket and like a premier bracket. I don't know if there was anything lower than that, because I don't remember. My only memories or my experience was with Marcelo Balboa's dad, which was Louis Balboa, which, you know, ran one of the best clubs or club teams in Cerritos at the time. So that was the circuit back then. And that was literally when I was already kind of graduating high school. I was 16, 17 years of age. So I can't answer you very well. I would have to kind of maybe do some Google research to see what the hell existed back then. But for sure, you're not going to be able to find league standings or anything like that, because look, the internet actually came online where people were creating web pages and building up, you know, company websites and stuff in like the late 90s, I would say, is when things really started to kind of professionalize a little bit. And even in the late 90s, early 2000s, you probably wouldn't find much stuff online, remnants of it. So that's my earliest memories, Ben.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search, Gary, to see when Coast Soccer League that being formed, 1968. So maybe it was Coast Soccer League that you were playing in and you didn't even know. But you mentioned Donovan and other players. Like whenever you see pictures of them playing in their youth career, like you see AYSO, right, on their jerseys. So that was that like the big league back then? AYSO was not think about it. That, I can recall seeing, like, for example, all the like women's national team players, when you see pictures of them playing, like it was all AYSO, even when they're 13, 14, 15, right? And you just said Donovan played AYSO. So was that the pathway back in the day?
Bro, you laugh, but it's funny. Like, I don't know. We'd have to do some homework or research, but like Eric Winalda, like I said, is older than me. I think he's in his mid 50s at this point. I mean, we can do it. Let's do a quick little Google check. Eric Winalda. Let's see. Eric Winalda, he's 56 years old. Okay. So look, you just said Coast Soccer League was established back then. So I'm sure he probably played some Coast Soccer League club at some point, but for sure, AYSO, like well into your teens. You feel me? Yeah. But so, yeah, I guess that was the pathway to a certain extent. And the reality is, Benny, it's funny because, like, if all the talent, quote unquote talent, is in a particular organization, well, the organization is as good as its talent in a certain respect. So if Winalda and Ramos and all these guys were playing AYSO back then, yours truly playing AYSO, it was probably the shit. I don't know.
I'm interested too, Gary, in like, what were the costs back in the day to play AYSO? You know, because we just said, okay, AYSO was a top league back then. You look at ECNL right now, or MLS Next, which is considered the top league, parents paying 10 grand. I don't think back in the 80s, early 90s, parents were not paying 10 grand, you know? Now, I don't know, the parents pay $300 a season, $500 a season.
I think it was probably that, Benny. Back then it was probably, hey, pay for the uniforms, pay to be part of the organization, which is a nonprofit AYSO organization. I'm sure there was some sort of entry fee per player. It was probably like $50 or $75 or $150, something like that, Ben. And then all the parents, I remember, obviously, because I remember my parents, my friends' parents, they volunteer. Everybody volunteered a certain amount of hours to contribute, and everybody rotated. Okay, who's bringing the the halftime snacks and the halftime drinks and the post-game drinks and all, like all the parents would rotate every weekend. It was somebody else's responsibility. And I even think that there was a requirement to volunteer for refereeing. Don't take my word for it, but the pool of referees came from the parents kind of volunteering to be the ref. So there wasn't all this professionalized referee training that was officiating the games. None of that stuff was around then. And look, if you go back to how the U.S. men's national team did back in the early days, okay, so we weren't really qualifying all that much. In 1990, we did qualify. 1994, obviously, was at home. So, and they performed very well. And it's interesting because the performance of the U.S. men's national team is equivalent to their performance in modern day in World Cups and in international football. So it's just a curiosity, yeah, that as much as the youth game has been professionalized, quote, in quotes, at the senior level, at the professional level, it hasn't had much impact.
Yeah. Well, do you think in 10, 15 years, because if you look at the women's side, Gary, like we talk about all the time how the U.S. women have been successful because the rest of the world basically didn't allow women to play soccer, right? So, and now you've seen Spain, Japan, France, all of these women's international teams, they're catching up, and now all of a sudden they're better than the U.S. The U.S. is shocking now. So do you think, will the U.S. men's side ever catch up? Let's imagine promotion and relegation never gets implemented. We have the same system that we have today for the next 20 years. Are we ever going to compete for a World Cup final?
The answer is no, with one exception, which is when you're playing on home soil. So right now in 2026, when the U.S. plays on home soil, that is a massive advantage, as we've mentioned in previous episodes, because if you look at when the World Cup was in Korea, Korea went all the way, I think, what was it, semifinal, even when it was in Korea. And you can fact check me really quickly. When it was played in Russia, obviously Russia was eliminated by the eventual finalist, Croatia, barely in the quarterfinal. So Russia did very well. And traditionally, Russia doesn't do shit in World Cups. But since they were at home, they did extremely well. The home team has a huge advantage, Ben. Home field advantage is real. So the only shot the U.S. has to get to a final, I would say, is next year. And then after that, it's over. It ain't happening for all the reasons we've discussed on this podcast a million times, if you want to dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah. Even if you consider yourself a U.S. men's national team fan, you're hoping that the U.S. gets bounced in the group stage, bro. Because think about it. They make a run into the quarterfinals or semifinals. You're going to have all the pundits, everybody from MLS saying, look at our system. Look at what we're producing. We just had an amazing run. Everything's working fine. Look, we just made it to the semifinals. You would almost hope, if you truly want to see soccer change in this country, that you get bounced in the group stage, you know? And if you're a fan, I mean, suck it up, bro. Honestly.
I'm torn, Benny. I'm torn as to how I want them to perform for all the reasons you just mentioned. Because massive failure is what stimulates change. And that goes for absolutely every organization and every individual, not just in soccer, across all professions, across all walks of life. Massive failure is what incentivizes you to actually take action and change your life and change the way that you conduct business. So I'm all for that. The challenge for me is they might blame it on the big bad foreigner, which is Pochettino. And so that gives them the political capital to then get one of their monkey MLS coaches to be the men's national team coach. And we can't have that, Benny. We cannot have that. We need somebody who is legit leading the U.S. men's national team, not for performance reasons, but for reasons of having the largest microphone in all of American soccer and then educating the fan base and the media one way or another, right, as to what reality actually is. I'll give you an example. Pochettino came out and said just a handful of days ago, and I've been meaning maybe to even record a solo podcast on this because people had their panties all in a bunch over what he said. He was asked by a reporter, journalist, quote unquote journalist, reporting like as if we fucking had real legit fucking journalists in this country, okay? He was asked something about the missing players. Oh, what about, you know, the players that aren't being called up, you know, kind of like why and that stuff. Fine, totally valid question. Pochettino's response was like, I'm paraphrasing. What is it with this question? Why are you guys asking me, why is this player not here? This player not here? This player not here? He's like, we're not talking about, I would understand it if you're talking about Messi or Pelé or fucking, you know, Neymar or Ronaldinho or like, I would understand that. But the players you're talking about, I'm paraphrasing, reading between the lines. The players you guys are talking about are like, whatever, you know, it's just another player.
Yeah.
And people fucking had a cow over this. A cow. Oh, like Pochettino, what an arrogant prick. You know, what kind of a response is that? You know, that's a non-answer. No, it is a legit answer. You just don't want to hear the answer. You don't want to look at yourself in the mirror and realize what I've been saying for fucking forever, Benny, for years, that there is no such thing as an A team or a B team or a C team here in the United States player pool, because they're all basically the same level of player. They're all basically the same. Nobody fucking is super special around here. Okay, maybe Christian. I'll make an exception for Christian. Maybe one other player, two other players, maybe are exceptions, are as super outliers compared to whoever else is in their position. Everybody else, they're all for the fucking same, more or less. But the American public, the American fan base, the American media, they don't want to hear that. They have this idea in their heads like, oh no, it's fucking clear as day where there is an A team and it's this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And all they're basing it off of is superficial pedigree and statistics. They don't understand football, Benny. They think that the pedigree alone or the stats alone tell the whole story of how, you know, individual ability and how a team is actually formed and a team that will actually produce results. That is not football, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, this kid, you know, Wea is on Juve, so he must be better than all these other guys. Or, oh, Chris Richards is, you know, Crystal Palace, the Premier League. He must be better than everybody else. Look, there could be marginally better players for one reason or another, for pedigree reasons, for stats reasons. I get it. But the way that they behave here, as if it is proof positive that these are the guys and nobody else even can hold a candle to them. It's not true, guys. It's not true. It just shows that you don't understand football at all. I'll end with this. Facundo just sent me, we'll put an image of this in the episode. Facundo just sent me a DM, you know, from Argentina, that there's this player, I don't even know who the fuck it is, and maybe that's embarrassing, I should probably know. In 2023, 2 years ago, this player was working a job outside of football. And today, he got called up to the senior Argentine national team. How does that happen, Benny? It happens because football is not how these people here in the States think it is.
No, that would never happen here, Gary. And, you know, credit to U.S. soccer's marketing team, because that's what they do. They elevate these guys that have been around for the past 5-6 years. You know, back really quick before we move back onto club, Gary, back to Pochettino. No matter what happens in the World Cup, U.S. soccer cannot lose, right? If they get bounced out early, it's Pochettino's fault. You know, if they make a deep run, see, look, guys, we know what we're doing. We brought in the right guy. Whatever happens, U.S. soccer is going to win. And I don't know, I feel kind of bad for Pochettino because he's walking into kind of a lose-lose situation, bro. And last thing, Gary, what do you think about, I hear a lot of talk about, like, you just saw the U.S. youth national team, the U-20s, just beat Italy 3-0, moving on to the quarterfinals. So you see all these people on Twitter and Instagram, and, you know, look at our youth team. We're on the rise. We're beating all these international teams. The future is bright. You know, why do you think the U.S. success at the youth stage and not at the senior level?
It's two different games for the most part, because at the youth level, physicality still is a very important factor, Ben. And I think all our youth soccer coaches here and youth soccer parents understand that if you're extremely athletic at the youth level, that kind of balances out your deficiencies technically and, more importantly, tactically with soccer IQ. Like, you actually can't compete if you are more physical than your opponent, speed-wise, strength-wise, even though you might be deficient in the other categories. Contrast that to the senior level, the men's national team. Everybody's a man. Everybody has physical tools. That advantage that you get when you're a kid, even at U20, which is 18, 19-year-olds, disappears for the most part, unless you're an outlier like Mbappe, who can just run by people, okay? And which is few and far between. And there's remedies for people like Mbappe too. You just establish ladder marking, right? Okay, there's Mbappe. One, you can man mark. That's one tool. Two is you can ladder mark, meaning one guy is on you when you have the ball, and then a second defender is going to be right behind the first defender, 5 yards away or 8 yards away. So even if the first defender gets beaten, the second defender is there to crack you. You know, you can develop all kinds of tactical schemas to eliminate an outlier physical player. That in the youth game, not so much. So you can get away, like the U.S. gets away with having, quote unquote, more physical players than the opponent. Just like Nigeria and Ghana and a lot of these African nations have won U20 World Cups and Youth World Cups, historically speaking, and are extremely competitive in Youth World Cups historically. But at the senior level, it all collapses, doesn't it? It doesn't translate anymore. That's the reason why success at the youth does not necessarily translate to success at the senior team for those reasons, Benny. So I laugh. Now the U20s, yeah, the U20s beat France. Okay, first off, do you even know the context? Were the best and brightest French U20s on the U20 World Cup squad? I don't even know because I'm not even really following. It's not that interesting to me. But that's one question to ask yourself. Another question to ask yourself is, does that even fucking matter? Are you telling me that this crop of American U20s, when they grow up to be senior players, are going to be better than the crop of U20s in France when they grow up to be senior players? Give me a fucking, what a joke of a fucking extrapolation. What a clown show, Ben. What a clown show. So everybody's all hyped and this, oh my God, the future is bright. Bitch, you're just showing how naive and ignorant and ill-experienced you are with football. Again.
How long have we been saying that in this country, Gary? The future is bright. I think we started saying that, what, 10, 15 years ago? Well, we're here and it's not bright. It's crazy, bro. Anyways, we went off on a massive tangent from club soccer to the national team, but, you know, it's all connected. You told me, Gary, you don't remember what it was like when you were a kid. What about when Brian first started with the club? Was called Orange County Soccer Club, right? Obviously, at the time, the big league was Coast Soccer League. What was the club scene like back then? What did the landscape look like?
Coast Soccer League was the end-all, be-all in Southern California. And in the entire country because, well, let me give you the structure of Coast Soccer League. Promotion and relegation. That was the law of the land. And the guy who ran Coast Soccer League, his name was Gary Sparks. Rest in peace. That is a legend. That man is a legend, okay? He understood meritocracy. He understood, no, you want to compete in one of these brackets? You have to earn it. You have to come in first or second place of the lower bracket, lower division, for next year, next season, for you to compete in the higher division. Pure meritocracy. I don't care if you're a mega club here. You're not going to tell me where your teams are going to play. That doesn't exist, bitch. Oh, you formed a new team? Pats or Irvine Strikers or Real SoCal, all these mega clubs. Mega, mega clubs. The best in the country, Ben. Oh, you formed a new team? You start at the bronze level, which is like the lowest level, which is 5 tiers away from the top level. Doesn't matter. You start there. Earn your way up, bitch. Okay. So he created this meritocratic system. And lo and behold, the teams that were at the very top, which was called the Premier League, when they went on to regional competitions to play against the champions of other states and stuff like that, they would wipe their ass with the teams from other states. And ultimately, almost every single age bracket, every single year, the champion of the entire country would be the teams from the Coast Soccer League here in Southern California. It was the shit, Benny. It was the best. And those were the peak, the pinnacle of youth soccer here historically in American soccer. Way better than this fucking pussy ass nonsense of MLS Next and this pussy weak ass shit of ECNL. All of this that exists now is a complete clown show recreational soccer compared to what the Coast Soccer League was. That was dog eat dog, hardcore, real football. This is a fucking country club now. Pathetic, Benny. Pathetic.
Yeah, it's sad, dude. And I don't know if you know this, Gary, but Coast Soccer League is still around and it still operates in the same way. Promotion, relegation. You have to earn your way to the top division. But it's really sad, man, because you look at like the premier bracket, which is the highest bracket, and it's all unknown clubs or small clubs, right? And ECNL, MLS Next, basically just by having the badge, have taken all the top teams away from me. And I don't know, dude, it's really unfortunate. But I still think it's badass that it still exists. And they say, you know, fuck you to MLS or fuck you to ECNL, EA, whatever it is. And they still operate in the same way, you know?
Yeah, but Benny, they're irrelevant now. It doesn't matter.
That's the thing. And
everything that they accomplished, which was the absolute maximum. Benny, I've been around a while. I've lived that, you know, and I've lived what came after that. And I've lived what exists now. It is not even close of a comparison as to the intensity, the competition, the concentration of talent, all of it, the coaching quality, all of it was way superior back then. And what effed it all up is when U.S. Soccer came along in 2007 and formed the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, they created a closed walled garden, a monopoly, basically. They said, hey, we're going to institute this new thing, which on the surface seems great, Ben. It's great. We should nationalize. I agree. It's good to nationalize the leagues, okay, to integrate them all into one cohesive pyramid. But that's not what they did. What they did is they created the Development Academy, and they did not implement promotion relegation at all. They said, we're going to allow this club, this club, this club, this club, and that club into our system, and nobody else. And you can't earn your way into the Development Academy. You can't merit your way in here. No, it's a rubber stamp sort of exercise. They were gatekeepers, and they picked and choose what clubs can compete in it. And they closed everybody else off. So guess what happened, Ben? Well, all the great clubs and great teams and great coaches that were competing in the Coast Soccer League, they had no choice but to bend the knee and be like, well, fuck, like we have to be a part of the U.S. Soccer Development Academy. I'm sorry, Gary Sparks. I'm sorry, Coast Soccer League. But like, if we don't do this, if we don't join U.S. Soccer in this, that's basically the end of our business. Like, yeah, obviously, it's the end of our business because everybody else is joining. And at that point is when they first started having, that, like the MLS franchises first started forming youth teams themselves. And so the MLS franchises entered their youth teams into the U.S. Soccer Development Academy. And so what are you going to do if you're a non-MLS youth club? You want to go and compete there, otherwise you're irrelevant. So they destroyed the Coast Soccer League. They destroyed all the other leagues across the country, Benny, by doing that. And then even worse still, the greatest irresponsible act of the federation ever, above the pro level, in my opinion, or at least it's a discussion to be had, is during COVID, they took advantage of this crisis, together with MLS, and they said, oh, we can't afford the U.S. Soccer Development Academy anymore. We have to shut it down. MLS is going to take over. It's now their baby. And they formed MLS Next. And now MLS is in charge of the youth system. It's absolutely disgusting, Ben, what has transpired here. They've destroyed youth soccer. Destroyed it. From every conceivable angle. Destroyed it. They've destroyed businesses. They've destroyed youth clubs. They've destroyed player development. They've destroyed the intensity level, the competition level. It's not intense or competitive. And I feel bad for parents who have kids in MLS Next now, let's say, okay, or in MLS Academies, let's say. They actually never experienced what it was like when there was a meritocracy. So all they know is, say, MLS Next, and they think, oh, wow, this is like super competitive. This is like high level. I feel bad for them. They actually don't know what high level or intensity actually is because they've never seen it. They never felt it. That's what it was in the Coast Soccer League. They are experiencing recreational soccer, Ben.
Yeah, and they'll never know. But yeah, Gary, that's why I'm saying, like, respect for not folding and continuing to just do their thing. You know, even if it's not the same as it was back in the day, they still said, you know what, fuck it, we're going to stick true to what we believe in, a meritocracy, and we're still going to have teams compete. But again, and this is a big problem with getting into UCNL or MLS Next or EA, is that when you apply to join the league, you need to have 7 or 8 teams that are going to compete. Well, think about it, Gary. A lot of small towns or a lot of small communities and clubs, they don't have 7 or 8 teams. They don't have 6 turf fields where, you know, they can have or host home games, you know? So there's so many hurdles and hoops that you have to jump through just to join those leagues. And it's just sad to me, bro. Like, think about, Gary, the top team in Coast Soccer League right now. Maybe they're, let's just make up an Anaheim team, right? A small Anaheim FC team. These guys could be 10 times better than the top ECNL team that exists, but they'll never get the chance to compete against them.
Yeah, that's why we have laws in this country that are in principle against monopolies. So you're not supposed to have monopoly power. The government is supposed to intervene when you have these big bad monopolies. I'm not saying soccer should be under the watchful eye of our government, although I think at the professional level, it should be. The government should be looking into Major League Soccer. The government should be looking into the NBA, NFL, all these sorts of things. Sure, topic for another day. But yes, since things have been monopolized here in American soccer, the youth system has been utterly destroyed, Benny. I wanna add to something that you mentioned about these teams or clubs joining ECNL or MLS Next and that they can't do it because maybe they don't have enough teams or the facilities or this or that or the other thing. It's worse than that, because even if you do have the requisite number of teams, even if you do have pristine, amazing facilities that maybe you even own or you have long-term leases and you can prove that, no problem, we got everything covered. Even if you demonstrate all of the quote-unquote requirements you need. Oh, look, all our coaches are A-licensed coaches. Obviously, you don't need all your coaches to be A-licensed, but I'm exaggerating here. Even if you have fucking everything, Benny, that doesn't mean that they'll let you in, because there are other factors that they consider that are not in black and white, that are not in the writing. Such things as, how would this affect Sporting Kansas City if we let them in? How would this affect LA Galaxy or LAFC if we let them in? How would this affect these other maybe non-MLS franchises that we don't want to, you know, upset, or we want to do a favor to or something, that are neighbors with this applying club? How would this affect them, right? It's like, so there's all these other, or I actually don't like you, Benny Rogers, so, and you run the club. You're amazing. Everything you've done is great, but I don't like you, Benny Rogers. No. So they reject you. And then they systematically destroy you with the modality of, like, since you don't have the rubber stamp, well, guess what? You're going to lose your best players to all the clubs that do have the rubber stamp. And you're going to lose your best coaches to, not necessarily the best coaches, but your coaches are always looking to, you know, coach at the higher levels. So if an opportunity comes around and you don't have the rubber stamp of competing in one of these leagues, they'll leave you. So systematically over the course of time, Benny, your club is destroyed. Your business is destroyed. It's fucking wrong, man. It's gross. It's gross. One more thing. I'm sorry. I have to. People say, oh, Gary, it's unrealistic. You want promotion, relegation at the professional level, you know, first division, second division, like it is in the rest of the world, not just England, not just Europe, but the rest of the world has promotion, relegation. You can't do that because the MLS owners paid all hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, so you can't expect them to put themselves at risk to being demoted and stuff. And I tell them time and time again, it has nothing to do with money, and they can't wrap their heads around that. Here is proof in the pudding that it's not about money. It's about power and control. Where is the argument about it being about money for MLS Next, or formerly U.S. Soccer Development Academy, or even ECNL, to do promotion relegation at the youth level? Nobody at the youth level has invested hundreds of millions of dollars to have their club in MLS Next or have their club in ECNL. Nobody invested hundreds of millions of dollars. So why don't they just implement promotion relegation at the youth level, Benny? Why? Why don't they just do it? I'll tell you why. Because it's about power and control. It's not about money. Power and control. They want to control who gets elevated and who does not. What clubs get elevated, what clubs do not. What coaches get elevated, what coaches do not. What players get elevated, what families, what communities get elevated, what communities do not. And that last one is important because I'll tell you what, as our last episode discussed, the Mexican Americans, they play soccer all day, every day. They're the ones who put in most of the time, energy, effort into playing soccer. They're the better players on average than everybody else. If you had promotion relegation at the youth level, you know what you're going to see at the top flights of youth soccer? All of them. They don't want that. They don't want Mexican-owned and operated youth clubs to be the fucking, the shit, the clubs in charge. No, they don't want that, man. So they want to keep control and power.
Yeah, man, they're scared, dude. They're scared. I love it, Gary. You're spitting fire tonight. I like it. Let me ask you this, Gary. Do you think, or maybe you even know, right? Do you think MLS executives or the top MLS people are behind the scenes, behind the curtains, telling ECNL who to accept, who not to accept? Obviously, with MLS Next, right, they have full control over that. But, okay, you look at the next division right below, or some people even say it's the same as MLS Next. Do you think they have MLS people telling them, like, hey, because you brought up the idea, right? How is bringing this club going to affect LAFC? So do you think they have some say, whether it be that they're leveraging them with opportunities or money, or do you think they're in their ear somehow?
It's hard to know, Ben. I always look at incentives, and let's say the folks in ECNL who are making decisions as to who would accept and who not to accept, they have their own personal desires too. Okay. So what are those desires? Well, everybody wants a little bit more money. Everybody wants a little bit more power. Everybody wants to go up the hierarchy as best and as quickly as they can. Maybe some of those folks are hoping to get into MLS one way or another. And it's a small world, so you can have friends and colleagues in the MLS ecosystem one way or another. And you have discussions with those people. So I don't know how they're swayed or not swayed. I've always contended that, look, ECNL at the youth level, along with MLS Next, they're kind of competitors to a certain degree. So if ECNL wants to compete and potentially win, you implement promotion relegation. You will sweep the market. You will sweep the market. You'll absorb the entire market. And I don't understand why they don't do that. So maybe I'll invite some of the folks that I'm aware of and know from ECNL and see if they'll accept the invitation to come on the podcast. And maybe I can ask them that question directly. But everybody's so scared to be transparent. Yeah. They're so scared. So I don't know if I'll get a straight answer from them or not.
No, okay. I think they're not going to get straight answers from them because at the end of the day, it's their livelihood on the line. So they can't come out and speak against a man. Otherwise, they're chopped, bro. You know? And this is a problem, Gary, with like how much of a joke it is, right? We mentioned this whole thing about you need this amount of teams to join and obviously other factors, right? But a coach that I personally know up in Seattle, I won't mention the name of the club, just smashed a team 17-0, right? And there was this whole debate like, oh, why are you scoring 17 goals? But a lot of the other comments that I see as well and people I write is like, why does this team even have a chance to compete at the ECNL level, right? Maybe their older teams are good, but the youngers have absolutely no business in there. Like all the comments are like, oh yeah, we just beat them 10-0. Why does this team even have a chance to compete? Fucking imagine a Mexican team that's will never get that opportunity that could be smashing teams in UC now, but they're never going to get that look. So it's just so corrupt, bro. It's sad.
The whole thing's messed up, Ben. The whole thing is messed up. And then we wonder why we, quote unquote, suck at soccer here. And people make up all kinds of logical conclusions. They are logical conclusions, but it's logical because they're missing critical information. For instance, they'll make the logical conclusion that, oh, it must be because our best athletes are playing the other sports and not soccer, right? It's logical. You think, oh, the other sports are more popular than soccer. And so kids somehow are like, oh, I want to play that sport because that's more popular and that's going to make me more money if I were to become pro. As if a 7-year-old kid is thinking, I want to play American football and not soccer because, you know, if I become pro, I'm going to be rich, you know, versus if I become pro in soccer, I won't become rich. No kid is doing that calculus. No kid is doing that calculus, okay? And a lot of parents aren't doing that calculus either. Oh, I'm going to put my kid in American football or in baseball or in basketball because they'll be millionaires if they become pro. And I'm not going to put them in soccer because then they won't become millionaires if they became pro. Nobody's doing that calculus, Benny.
Yeah.
Nobody's doing that. And, oh, but Gary, it's a cultural thing. You know, we're culturally inclined for those other American sports and not soccer. Another logical conclusion, but based on ignorance and based on lack of information, because soccer in the United States has tens of millions of players playing it, has tens of millions of soccer-first households, and those soccer-first households in number alone, tens of millions, is bigger than entire countries where soccer is number one around the world, and we suck more than they do. Like Uruguay. Uruguay has a population, total population, from 70-year-olds who obviously don't kick soccer balls to 2-year-olds who don't kick soccer balls to everything in between. They have a population of 3 million. We have 10 times that number of soccer players in America alone. And yet Uruguay wipes their ass with America in soccer. So it's not a problem of popularity here either. Oh, but Gary, it's because, you know, there's no money in soccer and we don't have the infrastructure that other countries. Bitch, what the fuck are you talking about? If you go to Europe, let's stick with Uruguay, but I can go anywhere in the world. I can go to Ghana, Nigeria, all of Africa. I can go to almost all the countries in Europe. I can go to Portugal. I can go to Belgium. And we can zoom into their infrastructure. I can even go to Argentina, okay, and look at their infrastructure of their professional clubs. It fucking is terrible compared to the infrastructure that the United States has. Terrible, Benny. Terrible. We youth clubs here in the United States who aren't even in MLS Next or ECNL. Youth clubs have better infrastructure than some of the professional clubs in Argentina and almost all of the professional clubs around the world. Youth clubs here have better infrastructure. And at the pro level, way better infrastructure. Way better infrastructure, man. The modernization of everything. And we have stadiums littered all across the country, Ben. Our infrastructure is world class. So again, another logical conclusion by people who don't know fuck all about football, they come to these logical conclusions totally wrong. It's more about the things that we've been discussing in our past episodes and now this episode where you want to talk about youth soccer system. What's it look like in the past? What does it look like now?
You go to any D1 or even D2 soccer facility, their locker rooms, team rooms, even the field, guarantee it's better than any second or third division in Europe. You know, I think it was Joe, the guy from Soccer Easy, he recorded with them maybe like 7 or 8 months ago. And he was saying how he's had all these D1 college soccer or former soccer players come over and they're playing in a professional league in Europe and their locker rooms are shocking and they're looking around like, what the fuck is this, right? And we're talking college here, not even at the professional level, you know? The money is here, the infrastructure is here. And by the
totally.
Way, by the way, Gary, just because we're on the topic of club soccer and I brought up this whole score of, you know, 16-0 and the debate in the comments about that, this is a whole other episode, but people are saying, right, like, how dare you as the coach score 16 goals? Bro, you're competing in, quote unquote, the top league in the country. Like, what do you want to do, bro? They want him to take off a player or fucking sit back and connect 30 passes? you're in the top league in the country. Maybe you shouldn't be in that league in the first place. Oh, I don't know, dude. That's a whole nother episode, Gary, running up the score and that whole debate, because people get really, really upset when their son gets scored on 14 or 15 times in a game, bro.
Yeah, and people want a virtue signal. If you're not even a part of that team and you're from the outside, you want a virtue signal. Oh, these are just kids. You shouldn't be doing this sort of stuff, right? Look how good of a human being I am, advocating for the children. You know, they politicize children, which is even, it's gross. It's gross when they use kids to spew their political ideologies. It's gross. It's gross. And let's pull on this thread a little bit further, because I had another thought in my mind about the logical conclusion that people come to in this country as to why we suck and how wrong they are, how naive and ignorant they are. They'll also say, oh, Gary, chill out. You know, we've only had, you know, the first division MLS has only been around for 30 years. It's been 30 years, Ben. 1996 was their inaugural season. It's only been around 30 years. You know, other countries across the country have a 100-year history with their motherfucker. 30, you know how long 30 years is? 30 years with the wealthiest people on the planet building incredible, the stadiums are there. We just talked about infrastructure. We have world-class infrastructure. We have world-class money, okay? We have greater attendance since the beginning of Major League Soccer, 30 years ago, greater attendance in Major League Soccer than almost the entire planet's first divisions. Seriously. And you want to talk to me? Oh, it's young. It's only been around 30 years. You know, you got to give it some time. Meanwhile, we got, and I know the metaphor, people are going to take issue with the metaphor, but fuck you, okay? We have companies coming out of the woodwork, like OpenAI comes out with ChatGPT 3 years ago, takes the world by storm, is eating Google's lunch. So Google search is getting annihilated now because people don't even go to Google anymore. They go to ChatGPT to ask their questions and find answers. And it's been around 3 years. What? Why don't you have the same excuse? Oh, it's only been around 3 years. OpenAI, ChatGPT needs another 30 years because Google's been around for 30 years until you can compete with them. Nonsense. Benny, it's nonsense. All of it is nonsense. If I start a new restaurant on the corner here, a new business in any domain, you can't use the excuse, oh, I just started, I need 100 years before I can compete. How brainwashed are you? You've been brainwashed. No, you've been brainwashed by the corporation, because this is a narrative that comes from them. From MLS itself. Oh, we just started with young league. You know, obviously it takes time. The future is bright though. Chill out. They want to be given a 100-year runway to then be able to be judged as to whether they've been successful or not. They want the excuse. We need 100 years, guys. Cut us some slack. Cut us a 100-year slack. What fucking... But Benny, in what world do people believe that bullshit? And they believe it.
It doesn't take a fucking 100 years to develop and to become a top competitor in the world.
But look, as long as we're on that topic, along those lines, Ben, England invented soccer or football.
Yeah.
And they've had it for over 100 years. Okay, so what's the excuse for England not being the global superpower or a global superpower? Why aren't they up there with Brazil and Argentina and France and Germany and Spain now and Holland? No, the England is like, whatever. They think they're heavyweights, right? And a lot of their marketing, and because of the Premier League, a lot of the world thinks like, oh, England, oh, wow, be careful, heavyweight or whatever, contender for the World Cup. But let's be real. They're not real contenders. And they've been around for 100 years and, quote unquote, have the best league in the world and have the most money in the world and have the deep cultural, you know, underpinnings for football itself, like hardcore culture. And they're not spread, you know, 3,000 miles wide like the United States. Everything is dense and highly compact in a small little country area. So scouting is easier, recruiting, everything is easier. Okay. So they have all the ingredients, right? Supposedly, according to American soccer logic. Why do they fucking suck? Why are they mid? What's the excuse there? Okay, so there's more to it than meets the eye, isn't there? Oh, but Gary, they have promotion relegation. Ha ha ha, I caught you. They have promotion relegation. Why aren't they the best? Well, motherfucker, everybody has promotion relegation. Argentina, Brazil, Holland, France, Portugal, go down Spain. Everybody has a meritocracy. Okay, yeah. So if that's not the issue, it's something else, isn't it?
Yeah. Paul Spacey's going to be sad, didn't you?
Paul's a good guy.
He is, bro. But what is the problem with England, though, bro? Why aren't they the... I mean, you just said it. They fucking invented the game. They have the best league in the world, or some people would say, you know? Why aren't they competing for a World Cup title every 4 years?
Well, I'll tell you the view that I have, which I don't think I invented, right? Obviously, I've been very influenced by Argentine culture, South American culture, and other European nations. Everybody historically, because it was true, okay, viewed England as having a particular playing style, which is very direct. That's where, quote unquote, route one came from. Go direct. You got your fullbacks or your back line has the ball, launch it forward, launch it into the channels, have your wingers or your forwards run onto it and try to score goals that way. Or when you do have it in the channel on the outside, serve it into the mixer, cross balls into the box, just as much as you possibly can. And maybe something good will happen. That has been their philosophy. That has been their DNA for decades, Benny. That was their DNA. That doesn't cut it. That is a suboptimal philosophy in soccer. Suboptimal. It doesn't work against teams that are tactically superior and emphasize tactical stuff or technical things. So they devalued the technical side of the game and they devalued the tactical side of the game, Ben, and they promoted the physical side of the game. Oh, look how he got stuck in. Right. So if you look at any Premier game to this day, the crowds massively applaud when defenders get stuck in and slide tackle, you know, and kick the shit out of a ball defensively out of bounds. You know, it's like, good job. They go fucking crazy over it. And they didn't even like Pep Guardiola. They're like, okay, now that this Spaniard is going to come over here, he's going to learn a harsh lesson at Man City. You can't do the shit that you were doing in Spain. We don't roll that way. You're going to see what defense really is. You're going to see what pace and power does to your precious little tiki-taka pass and move sort of football. My ball sack, okay? He owned the whole country. He proved you all wrong. That has been the problem of England, Ben, is that ideology, that philosophy of how to play football. Route one, direct. Hardcore. Don't go sideways. And by the way, touching on to our last episode, Ben, about how Rondos, U.S. Soccer says Rondos are not good and stuff because they're not directional. All derivative from England. All of that shit is a cultural influence over decades from England onto the American soccer landscape. Oh, you got to be direct. You got to be directional. Now, what is all this Rondo shit? It's all England influence. All of it, dude. And so here we are. We're still living with, you know, looking up to the motherland, which is England. We're derivatives of England. And we want to be like the Premier League too. We want to have that sort of game model over here. Good luck to you, America. You're modeling yourself after a fucking perpetual loser, a perpetual mid-nation at football.
No, I wonder if there can be a correlation made, because how long have you said that soccer has been around in the U.S., would you say? 50 years?
No, 100 years. The U.S. Open Cup is 110 years old, or however, it's over 100 years old.
I was just going to say, because like for England, it worked out well for them, right? They won the World Cup once, and I just looked it up, 1966, you know, but ever since then, nothing, bro. Wondering if at that time when England won, when soccer was starting to become more prominent in the country, it's like, oh, look at England. They just won the World Cup. Let's try and model our playing style off of them. Big, fast, strong, direct, route one. These guys have it all, you know? That's crazy.
Yeah, man. You also have to consider, again, like we've discussed earlier in the episode, England was the host nation at that World Cup that they won.
Sure.
They were the home country. So take that with an asterisk.
Very true. All right, good. Let's end the episode on club soccer, because that's what, you know, what we wanted to talk about today. There's a few more things I wanted to chat about, but our big problem in Mexico, and something that it honestly saddens me, dude, is parents get into the trap of all these buzzwords, right? You see teams that say elite academy, next level, or, you know, MLS next preteen. And especially if you're new to the game, Gary, let's say this is your first son or daughter that's playing, all it takes is for you to show up to one practice, and I'm sure the coach there is a good used car salesman, right? And he's going to sell you this whole idea. Oh, look, or this is a pathway. You're going to be on a Crete CNL team. You know, join us, spend $3,000 to $4,000, and in 2 to 3 years, your son's going to be at UCNL. And you look at the teams, and they're absolutely shocking. Like, I, as a coach, many times I've looked at the other team's name, and I'm like, oh shit, like, pre-development, pro academy, like, you're supposed to get me good. And you show up and you smash them like 7-8-0. But all these buzzwords and like badges, that this trap that parents fall into, man. So if you're new to the game and you hear that, you're like, oh wow, like, pre-MLS next, like, that sounds amazing. Let's sign my son up for that. You know what I mean? There's so much garbage out there, Gary, and parents fall into it every single year, bro. There's always a new crop of parents, right? Because eventually your kid will age out, and there's always going to be that next new crop of parents that have never played, have never had a kid in youth sports. And, oh, look at this team has a nice badge. You know, that's, they have pedigree. This team has 30 teams in their club. All right, let's sign up for this program. And it's just, it's sad, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what you want me to say to that. I agree with all of it. I'll just mention the other trap that a lot of folks here fall into is to take what you just said, which is what a lot of people say, and then say youth soccer is evil, it's a money grab, all that negative sort of stuff, that pay to play is the problem. Okay, yes, but also no, right? It is a business, and these clubs need to survive. How do these youth clubs survive? The incentives in the system, because there's no promotion relegation, the only way to survive, Benny, is then to be great at marketing, or be good at marketing, be the best you can be at marketing. Because performance on the field and long-term development and all the good things that we actually want don't matter. Imagine you're not an MLS Next club, or you're not an ECNL club. How do you survive? You have to come up with a unique story to tell the marketplace. So what does the marketplace want? Well, the marketplace wants the best development, the best training, the best competition, all that sort of stuff. So what are you going to tell the marketplace? Yeah, we kind of suck. We're not in any of the best leagues. And, you know, the players that we have on our teams are trash. You know, they're not really good. You can't. You'll go out of business in 2 seconds. So what do you have to say? You have to use the words elite FC. You have to use the words pro FC. You have to have your coaches that you promote on your website. Oh, this is whatever the fuck, I don't know, Division I college soccer player or former pro from Guatemala, or like, you have to like spice it up and have a good catchphrase and catch line. And, oh, look, you know, we'll move you on to, you know, MLS in the future, because here's an example. They have one player who played 5 games with them, guest played in a tournament one day, and they're using that player to, like, whatever. Like, you have to survive, man, because there's no promotion relegation.
Yeah.
If there was pro rel, then the marketplace, the parents would have signals as to what actually is what. I don't blame them, I guess is what I'm saying, Benny. They have no choice. I'm pissed too, but they are left with no choice but to bullshit the marketplace.
Yeah. I just sometimes feel bad for parents, dude, especially when I see older teams with those tags, Gary. Like, by the time you're U16, U17, U18, and you see, okay, pre-DPO or whatever the fuck these teams call themselves. And you watch the team play, you look at the individual players, you're not going to college D1. You're not going to go and play professional, but you're still being sold this idea that continue to pay $3,000 and maybe you have a chance because this is the pathway. Right. I just want to sometimes just go up to the parents that are sitting and say, look, if your kid loves soccer still, like, put him in a fucking Sunday league or put him in a rec team. And especially, Gary, the parents that struggle to make the payments, dude. There's so many parents out there worried about strap together money and work extra shifts and overtime just so that they can play in these teams. And you know, as a practitioner, as a coach, that your son or daughter is not going to make it. Like, as fucked up as that sounds, even though you want to sell this idea to all your players, bro, you have a chance. You could probably go and play D1. As fucked up as it sounds, Gary, you just know, bro. Like, you have no career in this. Are you making lifelong friends and are you learning life lessons and establishing good connections? You are, but I think you're doing it with the wrong reasons or the wrong intention in mind because you think, oh, there's light at the end of the tunnel. This is going to lead to me getting a full ride scholarship. Like, I feel so bad, dude, because there's a lot of parents out there, man, that struggle to make payments. Their coach, can I make payment plans? Coach, can I do this or that? And it's like, fuck, dude, just go and join your local Juice League, bro. Like, you want to tell them that, Gary, but at the same time, you can't because if you don't have this player, like if you're a coach and you lose this player, then you don't get your paycheck at the end of the month. You know what I mean?
I agree, Ben. No, I'm glad you brought that up and just didn't stick with my rant because there is a line there where it can turn into a scam and clubs or coaches even could eventually just be scammers at this point. And they know for a fact, like, bro, this, you're not going D1. I don't care how, like, I don't care if you're with me or with us for two bloody years and what you read on the website or what, zero chance, but they don't tell you that, you know, and I can understand and appreciate coaches not being completely transparent or clubs being completely transparent because to be honest with you, Ben, total and complete transparency in everything, like human civilization, I think kind of falls apart sometimes. Like brutal honesty, unvarnished to the max, like straight up, you know, like if I told you, Benny, you fucking stink today. Like whenever you, you know, like you can't get along with people. Like there is a little bit of lubrication that has to happen. So total transparency is a disaster because I'll tell you what, at all the levels, people will be getting brutal honesty and relationships would be broken instantaneously too. Even at the pro level, it's like even pro players, and like, it's like, bro, you think you're going to Europe? It's a fucking joke. Like, never gonna happen. Or bro, you're playing USL Championship at, you know, at this age, or USL League One at this age, and you ain't making it. I don't care how many hours you put into it. It's fucking over. But you can't say that because you need them to. You need their confidence to be up. You need them to perform. You need them to fulfill their true potential. So you can't just destroy them either. But I take your point, Ben. There are scammers out there. And I do feel bad for the parents who just get scammed left, right, up, and down.
Yeah. And also, you can't say it because they just pack up and leave and they find somebody that will tell them what they want to hear. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And Gary, don't get me wrong, Gary. Like, if you're 8 or 9 or 10 and the kid's goal is, hey, I want to go and play college soccer, and he's not the best at the time, there's still hope. I mean, he could still train and get better and put in all the work, but I'm talking about like the older kids, man, like 15, 16, like you just know, bro, there's just no way. And you're still being sold this idea of, hey, you know, $4,000 a year and it's going to put you on a college roster. It's really sad.
Dude. Yeah,
it is.
No. And hope is a crazy drug, Ben. Because if there's even a shred of hope, then that sometimes can be used against you. Like, though, I don't know, I'm just off the cuff here. I'm sure you've seen like Tom Brady's NFL trials, you know, when back when, you know, he wasn't an NFL player. Like, shocking. The guy is, Tom Brady's not an athlete. Not an athlete. He runs like, I don't know, some dude, you know, off the middle of the street. Not an athlete, not muscular, nothing that you want to see in a quarterback. I don't know when he was drafted. I'm not an NFL guy, but probably drafted way down the line, and eventually look what he turned into. So people will hold on to those outlier, outrageous cases as a shred of hope that they might also be something like that in the future. Even if they are 15, 16, 17, 22 years old, they still think, well, maybe.
Yeah. The other thing too, Gary, I just thought of it right now, is like the whole notion of the second and the third team in the club, right? I'd say the first team is in the top flight, very successful. By the time you, Gary, you're 15 or 16, and you, if you're not on the top team, it's like, what are you doing at that point, bro? Because what I guarantee you, what the club is telling you is, if you do all these right things, okay, we're going to take a look at you next year for the first team. And so, again, we talk about hope. They keep holding on to that hope of every year, like, hey, maybe I'm going to make it onto the top team, and look at all these college coaches that are coming to watch the first team. You know, I'm almost there, but
yeah,
I'm telling you, Gary, if my son is 12 or 13, if he's not the fucking baller, if he's not a star, this fool's straight up joining Mexican League or something, dude. Anyway, so.
Yeah, because why pay? Well, in 10 years from now, inflation is going to be such that you're paying $12,000 a year or $20,000 a year for club soccer.
There's no chance, dude. No chance. Unless this fool happens to be fucking Messi or something, there's no way. We talked a lot about the bad, about the problems in youth soccer. Is there anything good out of all this, Gary? Out of MLS Next, ECNO, the club team right now, how it currently is? Are there any good things or things to be positive about?
Fuck, man. It's a hard question. I as much as people think that I'm not a glass half full type of guy, I definitely am a glass half full type of guy. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I wouldn't be working in soccer. I would have left a long time ago if I didn't think that what we're doing, Benny, you and I, us together, 343, everything. If I didn't think there was a hope in the world, I would just abandon it. So it's an optimistic action that I'm taking by continually doing what it is that we're doing, Ben. So that said, it is hard to find the good in youth soccer in the United States. It's very difficult. Because I know what it was like in the past, which was way better, which is the exact opposite of what modern people think. They think it's way better now than it was in the past. It's the exact opposite, Ben. What is better? Maybe, here, I'm just going to try to play devil's advocate, but I know what I'm saying is kind of wrong anyway. By them creating a monopoly at the top levels or top level of youth soccer, they've effectively created, and this was their intention also, created a funnel to naturally attract and get the quote unquote best players without having to do any work. So you would think in principle that there is a higher concentration of top talent in the top league now in the country than there was before. I don't believe in that, because when you have a monopoly and you have a gatekeeper and you don't have a meritocracy, the flux of players in and out of the top level and the top team or top teams decreases. There isn't this churn, this natural cream rising to the top based on meritocracy. So you wanted me to say something positive. I'm saying something negative now, right? But okay, it's hard. It's hard, Ben. It's hard. It's positive. It's positive. Look, it's positive for the monopoly, because the monopoly doesn't have to do any work. I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe the following. There's more pathways, maybe. How's that? There's more pathways for players because there's more youth clubs than there's ever been before. And there's more youth clubs in the top tier than ever before. And at the professional level, there are more professional teams and organizations than ever before, right? You have 30 MLS teams, you have 30 some odd USL championship teams, you have USL League One, you've got all these other tiers associated with it. So even if you don't make MLS, you can go to USL championship. If you don't make USL championship, you can make USL League One. And there's all kinds of pipelines that have been developed to go overseas. I'm not going to be shy about it. In some part, you know, we contributed a lot to forming those pipelines overseas for young American players. So there are those positives, but goddamn, Ben, it's a hard question to answer. What is positive about youth soccer in this country? I just don't see it. I just don't see it, Ben. I just don't see it.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's nothing here. There's nothing. I just want to give parents some hope because, Gary, at the end of the day, if you want to have a career in soccer, you have to play somewhere. Even especially when you're young, it's virtually impossible for families to go to Europe, fucking Argentina, Mexico. Like, you have to play somewhere here. I would just be extremely cautious as a parent to not look at the badge, not look at the pedigree. Go back to our previous episodes about what to look for in a coach, what to look for in a team. And because there are, don't get me wrong, there are great practitioners out there doing good work. And maybe they are in these rubber stamp leagues and it's not their fault. You know, they want to compete at the highest level. But again, at the end of the day, if your kid has ambitions to play, you got to put them on a team somewhere. You know, you can't just sit here and complain about the situation, but it's hard, man. It's hard to find the right environment. It's hard to find the right coach and all these things have to align. I don't want the audience to think like, oh, fuck, man, I need to pull my 12 or 13 year old out of club soccer because Benny and Gary say that it's fucking shit. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. I just, you know, I want them to find the right environment, you know?
Yeah. It's all about ultimate objectives, because if you want to have your kid go and learn the piano, the guitar, or whatever, like, it seems like that industry, I don't think the parents have this expectation of, oh, my kid's going to be, you know, a professional pianist or violinist or a rock star or something. I don't think they have those things as a pretext, right? It's just like, oh, I want my kid to learn how to play an instrument, period. Yeah. And the relationship there is different. And for some reason here in American soccer, or probably sports generally, the parents live a lot vicariously through their kids and want their kids to maybe hopefully achieve something in that domain. Maybe it's not being a professional, but maybe getting a college scholarship. And that's obviously what everybody sells in this country, getting a college scholarship. So there's always that expectation.
Yeah. Not to be racist, Gary, but I love Asian, you know, but the Asian community, bro, when they put their kid in piano lessons, they fucking better become the next Beethoven.
No, the Asians, with my experience, again, I repeat what I said in the last episode, my girlfriend, longtime girlfriend, is Asian. And, you know, the culture is the culture. They demand excellence from their kids and they don't pussyfoot around their demands for excellence from their kids. And the soft American bitches here think, oh, child abuse, or like, no, everything should be soft and nerfed. And no, motherfucker, that's why they're successful and your bitch ass children aren't successful.
This might be a good way to end the episode. Obviously, we talked about everything that's bad with youth soccer in this country, but this might be a good plug for the masterclass as to help parents navigate this fucking maze of U.S. club soccer, dude, because without proper guidance, dude, it's like going to buy a new car and the car salesman fucking sells you the worst car in the lot, but he wraps a ball on it and shines it up and makes it look all nice, and you're already fucked before you leave the lot, bro. The transmission's gone and fucking needs new tires. I feel like that's what a lot of parents in this country go through without realizing. They show up on day one, they get this nice slideshow PowerPoint presentation from the coach of all these great things, and here's the pathway to D1 soccer, and 20K later led to nowhere, bro. So the masterclass, bro, could be a big tool.
Yeah. No, 100%. They unfortunately, they have to do a lot of the heavy lifting for the development of their kids in the sport, because the clubs here in the States really aren't going to do it. And the coaches here in the States, generally speaking, aren't going to do it. So it falls on their shoulders, Benny. And if it falls on their shoulders, they have to know what it is that they're actually doing also in the soccer sphere. So they need to be soccer educated, 100%, Ben.
Yeah, that was a good episode, man. I think a lot of people will get good value on this one.
Good, man. All right. Well, thanks for doing this out of your closet there, even though they never see that your background. We always put in a soccer background, but one of these days we should start doing these in person. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.